previously on Algoa FM Breakfast.
Over the past few weeks, there's been an increasing concern around stats released by the Eastern Cape Provincial Government, which showed a sharp rise in underage and teenage pregnancies between April and July this year. We chatted about it last week. Was it last week? Yes.
Yes, last week. We sort of carried on the news, yeah.
Yeah, so the stats are as follows. 117 children aged 10 to 14 gave birth in public hospitals in the province during that time, just between April and July 2025. And in the same time frame, 4,752 girls aged between 15 and 19 gave birth in public facilities. The areas which had the highest numbers were OR Tambo, Nelson Mandela Bay, and Buffalo City. And in response, the provincial government made a call to parents and guardians and communities to come forward if they know of children who have been sexually assaulted, to report such cases and to support investigations. And today we're joined by Dr. Brenda Buchman from East London. She's joining us on the line. Dr. Buchman sent me an email about this issue, and she has some interesting insights into what these numbers mean, what's being done, and what needs to be done. So, Dr. Buchman, thank you so much for, one, reaching out, and two, taking the time to chat to us this morning.
Thank you very much, Lee, and good morning to the team and to the Algoa listeners. It's a crispy, sunny morning here in East London for this very important topic. And I also thank Algoa's producer, Corn, for recognizing the importance of this topic.
Dr. Buchman,
yes, are we going to dive right in?
We're going to dive right in, but I'd just like you to please just give us your credentials. I wanted you to tell us a little bit about your background and why it was important for you to reach out with regards to this topic.
So for the last 14 years, I've been a psychologist in private practice. And prior to that, I had a specialization in criminology. And that is also the study field that I hold a PhD in. And together, combining that has led me to interest in neuropsychology, which really focuses on how the brain and the individual then interact with the environment. So this topic has become a passion of mine, in that I often see how distorted the picture becomes when it's spoken about and when it appears in social media posts and even just in newspapers. So the perception here is that this is a problem of the girl child. And I think even if we just look at the last couple of weeks' newspaper headings, it's teenage girl pregnancies. And I think we've got to really widen our lens a little bit, because it's not just a girl problem. It's also not a male problem, but it is a problem within our society, and we need to act on that. It's our social responsibility to start to action even a tiny little project that can address what is actually happening here.
So let's just look at that very quickly, Dr. Buchman. You said you know, that you've seen how it's been spoken about on social media, and you talk about headlines that refer to it as teenage pregnancy. You have stressed that we need to call it what it is, rape. Why is that language so important, and why do you think it's so often avoided in public conversations?
Well, partly to blame is our perceptions around the topic, and then also how the information is presented. So you will see when statistics are grouped together for the different age groups, you find that the group 10 to 14 years is grouped under one section, and any sexual interaction below the age of 14 in our country is considered rape. So to add that figure to the issue of teenage pregnancies is really distorting the picture here. Similarly, the developmental stages that they are at of a 10-year-old and a 14-year-old is not the same. And we know that research done in South Africa is showing that the first sexual intercourse happens at the age of 14 for boys and girls.
Yeah.
So the
I just wanted to now touch on, because you're kind of going into this territory, and I'm trying to, you know, go back to your email. In your mail, you highlighted the real driver being unequal gender power relationships, mm-hmm. not just a lack of contraception, mm-hmm. for instance. Can you explain exactly how those dynamics play out in our communities?
Well, this is where there's both sides of the coin. So we have this overemphasis on the female, on the girl child. And then we have this almost like forgotten or non-existent partner side of that girl child. So the boy children who might have become involved in inappropriate behavior, they are also not receiving attention. Nobody is saying that, what are our boys doing? What's happening to the male child in our society that this can be seen as a norm or as a standard for them to build an identity?
Doctor, we often talk about the rising teenage pregnancy stats year after year, but beyond just creating awareness, how do we actually start narrowing the gap between the stats and the law? In other words, how do we move from just tracking the problem to actually reducing it? Are there practical, systematic interventions that can make a real difference eventually to bring these numbers down?
There's a number of things that can be done, and I think this is where my appeal really lies, is with every person in our community. And it's not about just trying to prevent it. It's trying to notice our children, to have that connection with the young people in our society where we feel either we can't relate to them and they can't relate to us, and as a result of that, there is just no connection. And forming a connection for any human being is a biological imperative. We saw the difficulties we started facing during lockdown in COVID because of the isolation, and we still in our consultation room see people today as a result of a fallout of that lockdown and the impact that that had on them. Our human brains are wired to seek safety in relationships. And when young people feel connected to a parent, to a teacher, to a mentor, to a community, they are more likely to make healthy choices and recover from mistakes, because we know we are a resilient nation. But how do young people recover from mistakes? They need the support of the adults. When they feel disconnected and isolated or even shamed, we see more risk-taking behavior, more despair, and more harm. So the teenage pregnancy dilemma actually becomes a mental health challenge. Mm. And when we talk about this connection, we have to challenge our thoughts here, because they may go to aspects of focusing on time and money, but this doesn't actually need to be the case. So we know about the six-minute hug. I'm sure I've heard Lee often refer to the six-minute hug. This is not what I'm trying to suggest. There is another eight-minute rule that you can find on YouTube. Simon Sinek talks about it, and it's a really powerful suggestion where he appeals to people to just spend 8 minutes a day with young people, without distractions, no phones, no rushing, no anything special except be present. So the 8 minutes a day may not sound like much, but it's enough to signal, I see you, you matter, and I am here. So imagine if every parent or caregiver or teacher or any ordinary person in the street did that just for 8 minutes. The accumulative effect on connection would be enormous, not only for the person on the receiving end, but also for you, because in that very moment, you become the parent you might have never had, or you become the parent you needed and did not get.
Now, government has called 8 minutes. We'll look out for that. But government has called on parents and guardians to come forward. Now, from your experience, what are the biggest barriers that stop families or communities from reporting abuse?
I think it's It's unfortunately our criminal justice system that very often makes the reporting quite traumatic, makes the outcomes of the cases can be demotivating. You don't need a criminal justice system to tell you that you've been raped, but we want to act against the perpetrators. So that is a process that we need to go through, and it's time consuming. It's quite traumatic for young people and for their families. And very often when we look at the statistics around rape and gender violence in our country, it's somebody that knows the child, so is familiar to the family, and is even in some cases a family member. And sometimes the consequences of that is weighed up against whether a matter is reported or not. So we really need more awareness. We see that, for example, in a country like Kenya, where they started a project a number of years ago teaching young people, boys and girls, to be more assertive, to be able to say no. They launched this project. It was run by an NGO across Kenya, just teaching these little children to say no, stop. The rape went down with 50%.
That is incredible. Some teachable moments there, some lessons to be learned. Dr. Buchman, yeah. I am so sorry we have run out of time. This is certainly a conversation that deserves much, much more than 5 minutes. We are in contact. You've got my email address. I've got yours. And please do keep in touch. Thank you for your insights this morning and for reminding us that this conversation is not just about statistics, but it's about children's lives. And as you've said, even in your mail, the way forward is simple but powerful. Stay involved with your kids. Stay informed and, keep questioning. So if we can each do that in our homes and in our schools and in our communities, we move closer to protecting our children and creating a safer future for them. So thank you once again for chatting to us this morning and for all the work that you do.
Thank you very much, Lee, and thank you for the opportunity.
Algoa FM Breakfast is the business.